Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Cloudbreak Discovery, it's a project generator and royalty generator for the natural resource sectors. We are listed on the LSE under the ticker CDL, and we've been listed since early June of 2021, so about 7 months. It's even though we are a new business, we are an experienced management team executing this business strategy for over 10 years privately. So it's what we try and do is we try and diversify commodity and jurisdiction risk using the project generator model, acquire projects, and subsequently bring a partner into those projects in order to advance them, and bring in partners subsequently to advance those projects, spread it over numerous projects in order to recoup capital from different areas and grow our balance sheet in that manner. So from there, once we've assembled the projects and built a footprint, we move into the exploration stage. Phase one exploration, very simply, we're establishing controls and refining our thesis and trying to prove or disprove our initial thesis. So if we prove it, great, on to phase two. If we disprove it, we ask, okay, is there a secondary thesis that's been developed into this, or are we going to shelve this project for the time being? And if we're going to shelve it, great, we shelve it. We don't spend any more capital on it. It's not of core interest anymore. But if we do have a secondary thesis, then we move it on to phase two as well, expand the data sets and look for the wider opportunity and start to usually develop a drill program from there. Rory, do you have anything else you'd like to add onto the project generator model here?
Not so much. I mean, I guess the one thing would be that, you know, you touched on that phase two exploration, and sometimes it is even the exploration thesis will be proven correct, but it's not necessarily always going to be clear what the next step is in terms of how we would approach our partner and say, this is the next program you should do because we think it's growing into this sort of thing. So in some cases, we haven't done it yet within the Cloudbreak portfolio, but both Kyler and I have seen this in the past where sometimes you've got to do that next program to get a partner enticed enough to see what we see. And so that's another piece that sometimes isn't always clear, that, you know, we do the desktop study, we do that initial program, and then you go find a partner. And sometimes you're not always going to find that partner, even though you remain excited about the project. So sometimes it'll take a bit longer to incubate the idea into something that the broader market understands.
That's a good point. You know, if it was simply point A to point B, it'd just be so much simpler. But let's face it, it's exploration, it's resource development. You know, it's never point A to point B. If I've seen that in my career, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, it's really never X marks the spot. It's how many X's can you get cluttered together to mark the spot?
Ah, geostatistics. I like it. Yeah. Anyways, from that exploration phase and that kind of data collection phase, we move on to the partnering phase, which is really where the project generator model differs from your traditional exploration, junior exploration company. Partnering, monetizing, it's one and the same. It's bringing someone else in to take on part of the exploration risk and us getting part of that discovery potential at the same time through an equity ownership. And the first method, and very standard, very well known across the board, is the first tranche that we operate within here. It's the option, joint venture, or flat out sale of an asset type model. For this, we get cash to mitigate our early expenditures on the project. We get milestone payments as we move the project forward, equity positions for the midterm and to maintain part of that discovery potential, and then a retained royalty in order to really have that long-term view. If a project does go into production after a discovery, we want to make sure that we, you know, for our ideas, the company is compensated. The second piece of this, and this is where it gets really intriguing, and Rory and I believe why one of the reasons we really like this model is, let's say we find a group of assets within a geography or within a similar commodity group, and we figure that they can all work really well together. what we'll do is we'll create a subsidiary, we'll put those assets into the subsidiary and via and put a new management and group board of directors in there, and via a plan of arrangement, spin it out into an entirely new entity, return part of that capital, return part of that equity position back to our existing shareholders for the benefit of having being shareholders of Cloudbreak. So you can look at it as a bit of a share dividend, if you will. And then you have ownership of an entirely new entity for having had to do nothing. Now, Cloudbreak will retain part of that equity for our upside and for the work that we've done putting into it, but also we'll retain a royalty on it for that long-term potential. So this methodology here, this isn't, you know, do one of these every week. We like to look at this and say, okay, we'll look and try and do one of these maybe a year, maybe every 2 years, but it's really project driven or portfolio driven on that nature there. Rory?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say it really does depend on you know what the scale of study is, and you know Kyler touched on it earlier when we were talking about, is it national, is it regional, and depending on the idea and the size of the jurisdiction, sometimes it takes 18 months to pull these pieces together, even just to identify, okay, these are the five prospects, and actually wait a minute, they really do play well together. And then there's the additional more business and less, like we do that initial build on the technical side, but then because of our expertise, we're able to actually do the corporate side and build this company and identify a team that is either share the enthusiasm and just jump in there, or they're just the right people to lead that specific initiative. And again, because we retain these share positions, we'll continue to be involved in the new entity and make sure that they enact our dream, our vision, right? Because that's the other piece too, is so often, if you get too transactionally focused, it's just pump and dump. And that's absolutely not what we're doing. We are trying to ensure that we get to participate in as many opportunities for success as possible. And to get to that success, you need to retain accountability on it and be able to give feedback and input to make sure that they're continuing the vision. So that's definitely one of the pieces that sometimes gets lost in the mix with the project generator is, okay, so you've monetized it and you're out and you're done. And it's not quite the case here.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, we'll get into this a little bit later on.
Yeah, but I don't want to get too off track, but
it really is about the team and refining ideas. So we're not executing on every idea. We really want to make sure we're taking the best of the ideas and putting our time and effort into those where we do have the best exploration and discovery success. So, now from there, from that spin out model, there's one other model that really fits into a project generator nicely. And, you know, it is a longer term prospect, if you will, but it takes a lot longer to put together generally. But it's that strategic alliance opportunity with mid-tiers and majors. Mid-tiers and majors are good operators. Juniors are generally good explorers. You know what? Stay in your lane. Don't cross over too much. Let the money makers make the money. Let the explorers find the interesting stuff. But the benefit that mid-tiers and majors have, especially over the last 30 years with all the M&A that's gone on globally, is they've acquired these huge data sets, and they're usually only focused on the mine site or near mine site exploration potential, whereas a junior really wants to look at everything. So one of the things that we've historically done is choose a defined geographic region, come up with an exploration model that we want to look for within that region, and start to approach some of these larger entities around accessing some of their data, bringing our data in, having them finance some of our exploration activities. They get an earn in on the project or a joint venture or a clawback if we find something. And we keep the model on this side pretty loose and open to discussion and negotiations when we put it together, because every operator has a way they like to do things. Some like the back end, some like the joint venture, some simply like to finance your exploration and earn you out and down to a royalty. So It's as many operators as there are projects. You'll find a different way of doing things. And I know Rory's had a lot of experience conceptually and executing on these type of projects. Do you want to add anything on that last bit there?
I guess the one piece being acknowledging, you know, it's all about time, right? So like you say, all the M&A action, suddenly the mid-tier of the major was acquiring a company for one asset, but there were six assets in there. And it is just a matter of they don't have time to do it. They'd rather see something happen with it than watch it either they pay the land holding fees, which gets pretty expensive when you're in 20 countries. And your annual fees could be $500,000 or $1 million per country just to keep the claims in good standing. So the opportunity for them is to see the projects advance and allow them to make a decision on a property that, you know, you never want to just give something away. Once upon a time, the joke was, if Naranda dropped it, stake it, because there's probably a mine there. it was a little unfair, right? And so a lot of companies became pretty acutely aware of that and didn't want to just drop ground because they didn't have time for it. They couldn't evaluate it properly, so they drop it. Really isn't a good business model. No. And so that's where being the prospect generator, we're the ideal team, because we're going to take that big data set, we're going to tear it apart, and we're going to see what's interesting in there and then circle back. And so even it doesn't matter the deal structure, the major will make sure that they're compensated properly. And sometimes the advantage is where they value it quite low, there's actually a pretty easy deal. Or if you take a big regional data set where maybe they don't have any land holding at all, they just have an old data set, which Kyler and I have stumbled into a few of those in the past, where, you know, a company like Santa Fe Railroads gives up all their mineral rights in the US and there's your database, right? So I've been chasing after that one for a little while yet to get to it. but it's that idea where there's an aspect to stay in your lane. Like, we can get a lot more exploration done than a major because there's less bureaucratic process to it. But also it is just the acknowledgement of their team is working on those near mine opportunities and those in mine developments. So it's just good synergy, very much the same as we generate ideas. And then there are technically proficient partners looking to partner in on these projects.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's good. And, you know, I think one of the things that we've really probably touched on a few times here, and you guys have heard the word team come around a fair bit. I think that this model is really driven by a team, and a team that knows the business and knows the exploration, but also the corporate side of stuff. And I think we've put together a pretty solid core team here, including our board of directors, in order to advance the company and execute on this model. Myself, I've been in the resource sector as an operator for almost two decades now, and got involved in the capital markets after I guess it was mid 2014 or so. Built a couple of exploration management firms, spent some time working on the diamond drills and oil rigs, and really just became an entrepreneur. And as much as that term annoys me some days, it is finding a way to create value where others haven't seen value. From there, you know, it's really been building up, you know, the balance of the team. Dave Robinson, our CFO, he brought him out of the TELUS Pension Trust. And prior to that, he was an audit manager over at a mid-tier audit firm here in Canada. And he's really, you know, keeps Rory and I and Cam and Henrik on the rails to make sure that we're executing and we're pushing forward in an appropriate manner and coming up with interesting deal structures to make sure it makes sense for our partners and for the group overall here. Rory, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, initially started out looking for nickel, and then it was a lot of consulting. So whatever people wanted me to look for that week, I would do. And that was probably about 6-7 years of just point me at a project and I'll do the things that need doing, which was a lot of fun. So instead of like later in my career, I'd spend almost 4 years on one project. Now, in a given year, I would be looking at 8 and 12 projects and evaluating their merit in their commodity space, getting up the curve in a jurisdiction very quickly and all this other stuff. And then I also have worked for a number of prospect generators before. So one of the companies I consulted to was Rimfire, which became Kiska. And then I was working with Kiska. And they were, you know, they took that prospect generator model to a point where they were focused more on Whistler. And then I was actually in the background continuing to do the model and the desktop data piece on their other properties. Again, big portfolio, you don't want to give it up. And so from that, we actually took the Mexican assets and spun out Evrim Resources, which is now, I believe it's Orogen. And again, worked for all those prospect generators and then shifted over to Kaminak, which I'd actually consulted for in the past as well as a prospect generator. And now they had pivoted to coffee. And it was, well, you ran our other projects pretty good. Maybe you should come have a look at this one. And it, it was 4 to 9 drills, 3 helicopters, 120 people on site at any given time. And now you can see what happens. But so, you go through the experience again, and Kyler touched on this as well. You kind of, as you do the consulting side, as you do the prospect generator side, you actually are always touching more projects. And we always joke, he who sees the most rocks wins. And I'm trying to catch up.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good way to look at it. Is if you're prospecting and you don't turn that over that piece of grass, but you turn over that piece of grass, what you're looking for is probably under the piece of grass that you didn't turn over. Yeah. So it is. I do like that saying. Just the rest of the core team here: Henrik Mikkelsen, VP Corporate Development, ex banker and portfolio manager, commodity trader based out of Europe. We brought him on to increase our market visibility within Europe itself and into the Swiss market and the resource investors there. Cam Barsh, friend of Rory and mine for the last decade or so. We've worked on and off with him. And we really brought him on to lead our technical efforts alongside Rory, but his structural ability and his ability to break down larger concepts into bite-sized pieces, I think, is a really key factor in our exploration model, and to see if there's an opportunity to derive value out of something that's maybe a little bit more advanced. He can kind of see into those, and really his past work allows him to pick the little pieces apart, if you will.
And it is the same with Cam as with me. He's got the gambit on the commodities and jurisdictions. He and I have overlapped in different years in different countries, and it's pretty fun to compare notes sort of in retrospect. What one of us saw, the other saw a different thing, and then we actually build a bigger story right out the gates on that.
Absolutely, yeah. And then board of directors giving us direction, helping us navigate through the markets and the projects as we see them, giving us some higher level insight. Kyle Hookey, ex Goldman Sachs, JB Weir out of Melbourne, previously Euros out of Perth to that, now based back in Perth again, and working on business development and some corporate development opportunities down there for us. Emma Priestley, well-known explorer and developer within the UK and the general resource markets, currently running Goldstone, building her gold mine down in Ghana, and we're hoping to see that producing any time now. We're very supportive of her, and she's been a great sounding board for technically, but also corporately for us. Andrew Mayle, a fellow Canadian, transplanted to the London markets a decade or so ago. And again, back to the corporate side, really giving us some direction, helping us understand the landscape a little bit better, if you will, in the UK as compared to Canada, where we've executed exploration and corporate actions more recently. So we're going to just have a quick chat about a couple of projects here. This is a select project locations, but Rory's chosen 3 projects to talk about out of this portfolio. And Rory, take it away. It's all yours.
Yeah. So Kyler and I have really spent a lot of time thinking about how to best present 16 projects. And don't go to sleep. We're just going to do three. And I hope that it gives you a snapshot of kind of how we approach things and how actually our portfolio is at different points in the exploration process. So the first one I want to talk about is Northern Treasure. So that's up in northwestern BC, and it's actually one of five projects that we recently acquired as part of a regional review. And it's targeting porphyries, high sulfidation vein systems, and VMS, and possibly said hosted mineralization as well. Now, ultimately, this is a good example. So back when I was working for Rimfire, they still held the Thorn project, and it was pre-creation of Brixton. And, you know, one of the questions that we got kind of asked, like, why would we do this, and how come anyone else doesn't? And this sort of speaks to it. So back in 2005, I was meant to go drill, no, maybe 2006, meant to go drill at the Thorn. Drill program didn't happen, but nonetheless, I had focused on the Thorn. It was a fairly large property, but, you know, I knew the trend continued, and I was pretty interested in other things in this area. And then, but you run out of time. You've got to focus on the Thorn, and then they're not going to do the drill program. So now you're in Saskatchewan looking for uranium, and you just pivot to where the payday is, really. I mean, it's a job we're all trying to do. And so it kind of left some unanswered questions from the regional perspective. And then Brixton did some really good thinking last year and reevaluated the camp for porphyry potential, which, you know, everyone always, again, perfect example. They'd been there for years. They were going after the epithermal veins because that was the drill targets that were ready to go, and they needed momentum. But now they had been given an opportunity to go to the broader exploration picture. And so when I saw that they started doing that, you know, we asked the question, what can we do that continues that thinking in the area? And is there opportunity? And so Cam pulled together this portfolio, and Northern Treasures is a great on-trend right mineralization, right structure, same age intrusions, and some showings that we were able to pick out of. So the neat thing is now Thorn is finding visible gold at surface, visible gold in drill core. I think they had 820 meters of 0.3 copper. It's pretty impressive stuff. And ultimately, so now we have an opportunity to explore in a camp that's got some good light on it right now. So there's some good enthusiasm from potential partners. And it is an opportunity to test that same ethos that I think there are undiscovered epithermal targets, and there's good porphyry potential on the property. And the reason it's sort of these two satellite pieces to each other is because it is... those are the spots that we thought were the most interesting. There's a couple of showings in the pink area there, but it's a little less accessible, a little bit less explored. So it is a big land package that we are looking for a partner on, but it was recently staked and recently visited. We got out there for a day and poked around a bit, but certainly there's more work to be done. And then, you know, the next project I'd like to talk about that, again, is available for auction still is Klondike. And this is kind of a neat one for a couple reasons. We did a strategic alliance with Alianza Minerals, which is another prospect generator. And actually, people that I've worked with at Rimfire, Kiska and Evrim. So I know there's a little bit of overlap there, but again, it's having the time to test ideas that you wanted to pursue and getting and ranking and prioritizing them and getting back to them. So in this case, Alianza they're active in the US, but they're also working on a project in the Yukon. So they had a few more ideas than they had exploration dollars. And so we partnered up with them because we liked the target. Kyler and I were actually looking at the Paradox Basin in 2015, comically. It's just something I thought was interesting, but we were actually looking at it for lithium on the Utah side. Now the deposit model here is a sediment hosted copper target. So good old fashioned base metal right in the middle of the US. It's about 35 kilometers from the Lisbon Valley mining complex. And last time I presented this, someone just said, what's a jumbled downdrop blocks? And it is the whole sedimentary package has been lifted up. And then the salt diaspora that pushed the seds up has been since eroded out. So everything jumbles down and it breaks. And it's actually those fractures where the mineralization occurs. And then it bleeds into the sedimentary rock. So it's pretty fun, geodynamic, structurally complicated mess with bounded by bounding faults. And so Cam and I have been scratching our heads on how to re-piece together, or how important it is. Like, you're always going to have multiple stages of structure, and the primary structure gets you on the dance floor, and then it's the secondary structures that usually offer good pooling of mineralization. And then it is there a third ordered structure that we need to be triggering on a fourth order structure? And you know, that's pretty nerdy, but we'll sit and contemplate it, right? So I'm pretty keen on this and why this fits in the sequence. So Northern Treasure, we've staked, we've done one visit. Klondike, we're waiting on results of our first phase one field program. And the guys were pretty happy with what they were able to access and what they were able to get done within the scope of the program. And we're looking forward to telling you guys when the lab gets back to us. And it is one of these things where we actually have three centers that we're pretty focused on and confident that we've got drill targets. The main center here, the larger red blob, because I'm not sure if my pointer will show up in the recording, but the main red blob here, we're pretty confident that there's good mineralization at surface, greater than 1% copper in outcrop. And so now it's about drilling the structure, because it's kind of neat too, because it's these sets package being up and lifted, there's actually multiple horizons that are favorable mineralization. So it isn't just one target. So yep, we've got it daylighting at surface here, got some mineralization, but then we need to drill under and test the units below. And so right now it is pulling together the results and think and trying to figure out where do we exactly want to drill, and then go get it permitted, have it ready to drill for next year. And so again, you know, this progression in the project pipeline. And then the third project I want to touch on is La Blanche. And I think it's quite a good example of both the prospect generation and also, you know, getting it to that point where it is our partner is advancing it and we remain active. So Kyler and I are both directors of a company called Temas Resources. They purchased the La Blanche project from us. It has a historical estimate of iron, titanium, and vanadium in an anorthosite complex. And so it got to mineral resource estimation PEA level, sort of in there, but there's still more work to be done. Currently, they're conducting a 90-day metallurgical program that'll support a new PEA. I was talking with the resource estimator this morning about our drill plan, and basically the pad cutters are ready to go out to the bush and get it done. Temas has raised flow through dollars to fund the exploration, and it's, you know, early next year we're hoping to have a PEA on the project. Now, the neat part is through Temas's acquisition of this, Cloudbreak retains 10 million shares in the company. It's, I believe, about 15.4% of the float, and it represents a keystone holding within the company. But because we have such a big position and because it kind of was our idea, we're both still directors so that we can still participate in how the ideas are moved forward. And Michael Dane's been great to work with. And now recently, Bob Schaefer's joined the team. I'm actually in Toronto right now because I was meeting with them the past couple days and just laying out what they're going to do. And the cool thing is, Temas isn't just La Blanche. Temas is also a Serbian borate project called Biskanja, and a basket of technologies that provide an opportunity for more sustainable, more environmentally sensitive metal extraction. And that's part of what we're doing, because traditionally to extract titanium, you roast everything to 1100 degrees. In this case, it gets up to 70 or 90 degrees, and it's actually a function of the chemical reactions. And then they're able to agitate and drop out the iron, and then drop out the titanium, and then drop out the vanadium. And ultimately, I apologize, I've kind of sidebarred into a whole other company, but that is a pure product of Kyler identifying through the network that this project was for sale. He and I looked at it and said, okay, these are the questions that need to be answered. This is the next program. And then we formed an alliance with a partner and vended the project to them. And so it really, I know it's just, I could go on, and I don't want to bore anyone. So these three projects really show the different stages of the 16 projects and sort of where we, how we work through them and where we're intending to go, and sort of why, hopefully you see why we're jumping around, is because, you know, Northern Treasure, it's pretty early days, and, you know, it's going to be a few months before you can get back there because of snow cover. Klondike, we've got to go through the permitting process. La Blanche, we've been in the permitting process to get out there to drill, and now we're ready to go. And so by doing this partner approach, we're actually able to have people working all these things forward all the time. And I really think that's a key part that doesn't always translate in the prospect generator, because you're generating the idea and then you're fending it. But it is actually, we're participating in many ideas at the same time and able to circle back and check in with the team and see how they're doing. So much, much like an exploration manager would do at a major.
Yeah. Rory, that's great. That's a great cross-section of the projects. I appreciate that. And yeah, we've got a lot on the go, and, you know, going to be a lot more on the go, but I think each of those projects highlights, you know, kind of different segments of the portfolio and the methodology about how we put them together. What it also highlights, I think, quite well is what we're looking for. You know, it's really, really focused base, bulk, specialty metals, industrial minerals, this type of thing. Of course, we've got a bunch of gold in there too. It just seems to be everywhere.
not gonna turn down a gold target.
Absolutely not. But you know, we're really the battery metals side of stuff over the last 12 months behind the scenes, not necessarily in front of market, has been a really core kind of project generation bit that we've been working on. We hope to talk about some really interesting pieces we brought together in the coming months here. In the lithium sector, copper again with our strategic alliance. We have titanium and exposure to high tech and metals through La Blanche. And one thing that a lot of people don't touch on is sand and gravel. The U.S. has recently passed a big infrastructure bill to revitalize ports, airports, highway systems, bridges. All these components need sand and gravel. It's a key component of building infrastructure, and we'd like to participate in that. And we're currently working our way through a few ideas on that. They are taking a little bit longer than you know, we first anticipated, but it's a function of having the time to make sure that we complete the first things we're working on before we move on to the next bits and pieces. One thing I do want to mention, primarily tier one jurisdiction focus, North America right now. One of the reasons we are in London, though, is we are going to start to cycle part of that portfolio in order to give a little bit of diversification back to this risk jurisdiction diversification over to Africa in the next little bit here. And because we have had success there, we do have good partners there, and we think that there's a really good exploration opportunity. And I guess one of the big pieces is we'll look anywhere from grassroots to advanced exploration, but that's truly data driven. So if we have information that we think can provide us a bit of an edge or a new idea that isn't necessarily fully baked into the market or into a project, we'll pursue it and put the pieces together around it. So it is a broad portfolio. We are a project generator. We do look for a lot of different stuff, but at the same time, we do have a pretty keen focus on some of the more battery metals or high-tech metals, if you will, that are going to support this greener economy, which we're starting to transition into over the next decade, two decades. I think it has yet to be seen. So just to put a little bit of some brackets around all the stuff that Rory and I have talked about here today, and it's a lot, I understand that. You know, Cloudbreak, a project and royalty generator for the natural resource sectors. We have a very experienced management team executing this privately and publicly for over a decade, and continue to do so through Cloudbreak. We seek to diversify our commodity and jurisdictional risk. I think that's a very key component of the of this summary. And we seek to partner ideas and assets that we come up with good quality technical and financial partners to advance. And whether that's other juniors, whether that's other majors, or whether that's private equity or anything, any crossover of all of those, it's how we advance an asset and maintain part of that discovery and development upside while mitigating our downside risk on it. And healthy portfolio of listed securities, 16 projects, 12 of which are partnered out at this stage, 11 royalties. We've got a copper focused strategic alliance in the Western United States, which is a with a group that's very well known to the management team here and us to them. And over 7.5 million of exploration exposure currently without having to dilute our balance sheet, and a really strong private equity partner in the background in order to support us if we want to go through a major acquisition or partner with on a larger asset. So Rory, do you have anything else you'd like to throw into the summary before we move on to the cap table here?
No, I think you've nailed it.
Right on. So as far as cap table goes, we have about 389,500,000 shares issued and outstanding. Of the top four shareholders own just shy of 40% of the company. Myself, been building this business for a number of years. I'm a large shareholder in it. I've put a lot of capital into it in order to move it forward. Outside of that, the other three are long-term supporters of myself and our business, and have been involved in multiple financings. Management, including myself, we own 23% of the company. Small institutions, high net worths, and own about 28% of the company, and retail owns about 49% of the company currently. And we're seeing an active transition from largely Canadian shareholders from the private sides of the business, the five companies we merged to form this new entity, into a much more European and UK-based shareholder register. So that's been ongoing. We've been actively moving the pieces forward, and we're excited to move on to the next phase now that we've got the company up and listed and have executed on the first number of projects. So with that said, that is Cloudbreak Discovery in a nutshell. And I believe we have some questions that have come in that Rory and I would be happy to answer. So, the first question we have is, Rory, how does the project generator model benefit shareholders?
I like this one. So, because it's nice and easy. As I said, you know, 16 projects, 12 of them optioned, and we've done the initial work to pull together the concept and really make it clear what's worth doing there. And that's kind of how we go about finding our partners. Now, from here, we give up a little bit of interest in the upside, but we don't have to spend the money to get to the upside, to the discovery. And so the way the shareholders benefit is you're now in multiple jurisdictions, in multiple commodity spaces. And so it's almost like a hedge, you know, gold tanks in a given day. Well, our commodity base allows us to not track with the gold. We're diversified portfolio, and like I said before, you know, an explorer, a junior explorer, may be limited to, there's no news flow because we're waiting on our permit, and then it's 6 months, it's 8 months, and they've got nothing to speak to, whereas we're habitually either coming up with our new ideas or we're seeing our ideas being advanced and our interest carried forward by our partners.
Yeah, that's a great response. I've actually got nothing to add to that. I think you hit it on the head there. And I may actually perhaps the only thing I do have to add is the opportunity to build a self-financing junior explorer. I think that's where the project really shines in comparison to your typical junior explorer, if you will.
Yeah, to that end, you know, reduced rate of dilution, potentially a cessation of dilution. And it is one of those things that the project generator sometimes gets beat up on because it's like, well, you're not testing your ideas. And it's like, well, actually, we are. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're giving up your interest in the project. And we're like, yeah, we're giving up a little bit, but we're retaining. And it is, you know, through the equity position, through the royalty position, and then through the percentage ownership, depending on how the deal can be done. You know, when KGHM came into Abacus in BC on their porphyry there, Abacus still only had 20%, but then their market cap went for a run because they were now participating with a major in constructing a mine. An example that came to mind, but
it's a great example.
Yeah. So anyway, hopefully that answers that one. Kyler, what do you think has been the cause for the decline in share price since listing? How does management plan on improving this?
That's a great question, and it's a matter of frustration for me on a daily basis. My best answer is we have to focus on building the business and continue to build the business and continue to execute on our plan and build shareholder value in that manner. Now, one of the components that I do know for a fact is we anticipated having a number of our Canadian shareholders, a bunch of smaller shareholders, decide that they didn't want to own a UK listed entity. And that's absolutely their right as shareholders. And as such, they've sold into the market. We've started to cycle part of that portfolio, part of that share register into new supporters and people that believe in the model, much more European and UK-centric shareholders. And what we're going to do is, like I said, to answer the question is just continue to execute the model, continue to tell people about the model, and really hopefully create some clarity for our shareholders on how we execute the model. We have to focus on building the business. That's it. And as we move the plan forward, I think some of the larger initiatives that we haven't been able to put out into the market at this point in time, because they're not fully baked yet, we'll start to be able to talk about some of those major opportunities that we're executing on and working with our advisors to make sure that they're put together in the best way possible. So build shareholder value through the generator model, through the partnering model, and maintaining that discovery upside. So
I think we're starting to show that, right? Like we did the strategic alliance in the US. We did the staking in Northwestern BC. We've optioned a number of the projects two of the projects so far in Northwestern BC, and we're active on our US stuff. Like that's the one thing that it's unfortunate that I think you're right. We've got to get the message out there because we are executing our business plan and it is executing nicely. The cash flow in from the optioning that we've done since we've gotten going has been quite lucrative. So
substantial. Yeah. So Rory, how does Cloudbreak find partners for such early stage projects?
Well, I touched on this earlier, but essentially it is by creating a concept and idea that they can embrace, right? So when it comes down to it, I mentioned a few times about time and time value proposition, being able to chase an idea versus having an idea presented to you. And so you kind of run into this trap of like, oh, you're an exploration geologist, so you explore. And that may be true, but you may not be able to do that fulsome desktop evaluation and the idea generation and sit there and think about it because you've got two drills turning and you've got to look after that. And but that doesn't mean you don't have an exploration budget. So when you're presented with an idea, you're like, ah, it's got a nice little bow around it. There's my first year's program, and it gives my company opportunity for new discovery. And that's one of the biggest things that Kyler and I have struggled with through the years is sometimes we get presented stuff and it's very advanced. And they're like, oh, look at all this work that's done. And you go, yeah, so what am I supposed to do with it? It would be, unless there's an obvious gap that, oh, it just needs this one more piece and then it'll be good. Or I don't know if this works or doesn't. But so many of the times you're like, okay, so you want X dollars for this project. It is worth X dollars. And so there's no opportunity. Whereas with the grassroots, we can't ask the moon because it's all just hypothetical. And some of these things will succeed. Some of these things will show some life, and some of them will just be duds. And that's, again, getting back to the previous question, the project generator model defends the shareholder against failure, because when we succeed, it's big. When we fail, it's flat. It's just an idea that didn't work.
I think that's a great way to describe it. And it's not everyone has every answer. I think that's the big one. And, having other people test the theories, having something presented to them with a little bow on top of it. Here's a full package. Here's the permits. Here's this, here's that. Go forth and prosper. I think that's intriguing. Because like I said, throughout this whole conversation, it's some of our initiatives are 12 months in, and we still have, a period of time to go before we're going to be able to really execute on them. So it's, we take up that risk up front so others don't have to, but we're compensated for it under the model. So,
yeah. And you think about during that 12 months, what our partners were up to, right? Like they, like I said, it's, oh, I've got a drill turning. I've got two other projects. I need more targets, but it's actually easier to go execute on a project than it is to generate the idea in terms of a time value proposition, right? So
absolutely.
And that is exactly why majors included, exploration and mining companies want to deal with project generators or want to partner up with other companies, because it's about creating that time to do the work.
Time's the only thing you can't get more of. So this is a question that's come up numerous times throughout our presentations, and it's and a common shareholder question as well as a partner question. When do you think Cloudbreak shareholders will start to see a return on projects royalties?
Well, I mean, I don't want to go down the list of 16, but ultimately it is the earlier stage stuff. It's down the road. But that said, we do have the Imperial Helium stuff is on the horizon, more reasonably so. Surprisingly, the Apple Bay project could be in the next year or two. But it is at this point, the portfolio itself is, a year away minimum, yeah. I think.
I think you're absolutely right. And just to touch base on that too, I mean, one of the mandates and one of the ideas we have is, we do have a strong technical side, but also a strong corporate side. And we are looking and we're currently evaluating royalties across the resource sectors very regularly for an additional acquisition or for some way to for us to gain a royalty by executing from a corporate side rather than necessarily from a technical side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's lots of different opportunities, and we're constantly trying to find that next piece that really builds the value within the company, and we'll get there. It's a brand new company and lots of work to do yet, but I think the royalties are really, really the long-term component. And if we can acquire one or do a corporate action in order to end up with a royalty in some nature, we will absolutely evaluate it and execute if appropriate, and builds value for our shareholders.
And yeah, just quickly to touch on that more corporate project generation and corporate strategy is why, although our royalties today don't pay, we still consider ourselves a project generator and royalty company, because it is a piece of our day-to-day in the background.
Absolutely. So I think this question was answered, but I'm going to ask it anyways, Rory.
Yeah,
why would someone partner with Cloudbreak if they could do the same thing themselves, e.g. a major, a mid-tier, another junior explorer?
Yeah, and it's a fair question. I think I posed it to Rimfire when I was working for them, because I was a young Project Geo, and it was the, like, I don't get it. And it really did come down to that time spent doing the desktop study and doing the initial field work and pulling together the idea and seeing that opportunity doesn't start with the opportunity. It starts with the geologic thesis, and that time to run it down is not something everyone can afford from their staff. They've got drills in the field, and they're pursuing those projects, and they need to answer to those things. And then when you go to the majors and the mid tiers, they really are trying to make sure they hit their production deadline, their production profile. They're advancing their ounce count at the deposit. And that is, the exploration team is focused on that ounce count. And so they're not able to really work on these things, even though this is where the opportunity lies across the board. Discovery is an elusive beast. And so they're willing to, when presented properly, here's an idea. This is what we want to do. This is where we think it's going. And this is kind of what we're looking for to expenditure on the ground and what we need in compensation for coming up with the idea. Typically, paying us is easier than paying for someone to try and come up with something. And unfortunately, project generation, it's not as easy as you follow the tick box and you circle the map and stake the ground. There's a lot of gut feel, and you're reading between the lines in reports. Going back to a good boss of mine, Henry Almack, he always said, you know, there's just a certain way to read a report, and not everyone can do it. And at that time, he was politely suggesting that I couldn't do it, which was fair, because now in retrospect, it's like, yeah, I wasn't going to read between those lines. But now that's something that Cam and I have been doing for a few years, even jokingly looking at other projects and being like, I think they're saying this is bad, or, oh, this guy's really keen on the breccia pipe, but he's been told to follow the intrusion, and he's kind of angry about it. You can see it in the report. You can read through it. And so it's that ability, and it's not to say that not everyone can do it, but certainly the finesse is with a particular group out of explorers. Why are you focusing on base and industrial metals rather than battery metals?
Okay, so we've fielded this question almost at every presentation we've done, and through a number of through our analyst reviews and that, and the way I put it back to is battery metals are base and industrial metals. It's exactly. Lithium, it's an absolute industrial metal. Copper, absolutely a base metal. Nickel, the other half of a battery, base metal. So I would say, through our efforts in the base metal side of stuff and exploration efforts, we're actively seeking in battery metals as well as industrial metals. So it's everyone tries and breaks it up into all these little components. We're actively going after these battery metals as components of industrial and base metals. So I think that's probably the best way to put that. Is it's people break the categories up far too much. There's not any new metals being found. We're exploring for existing metals that are being repurposed into battery metals now.
Yeah, and it's kind of tricky, because I get why people do this, but simultaneously it confuses the market, because they want to pretend that they're the shiny new thing. And unfortunately, it's just more of the same. And we are going after base and industrial metals because they're going to be used in the green revolution, and they're going to continue to be used just across the board as the cornerstone of society. Like there's no pretending copper is suddenly a magic new metal is almost, I find it insulting. And so to call it a battery metal is foolhardy, but you should recognize that an EV uses five times the copper that an ICE vehicle does. So yeah, we're looking for the right stuff. Maybe we're just not saying the buzzwords, and maybe we need to. But I believe in the conventional definitions of where these metals categorize, and so do the textbooks. So it's a little bit, it's a buzzword that I think is creating misunderstanding.
I agree with you. And yeah, we're just to wrap it all up there. We are active in the battery metals, but through the basin industrials, they're substantially the same endeavor.
Yeah. So I think this actually falls right on its heels. The company has a wide variety of projects. How can the market value the company?
Again, a good question, and one we've been struggling with clearly over the last while here. And the way I have started to talk to shareholders about it, I think that there's, you know, some pretty key components. You can't look at it simply from an equity ownership component of the of our partners. That's a small portion of it. You've got a management team that has been executing this strategy for 10 plus years. You've got a portfolio of well thought out early to mid stage exploration ideas that we can monetize or explore ourselves. And long term view is the royalty component, and that's a tough piece to wrap a number around right now, simply because a lot of them are long dated. But there are some comparables for a few of the royalties out there. We're not active talking about it because I don't think it's right to necessarily talk about the value of the royalties until we get much closer to production, or we get through an advanced study such as a PEA or a pre-feasibility study on these assets. Now, with that said, it's part of valuing the company is the business model and what we think we're going to be able to execute, and if we're going to be able to continue to execute in a manner similar to what we have on our previous projects with our partners, and grow the value through that. So it sounds like a bit of a nebulous answer, but I think you've got the asset value, you've got the listed securities and unlisted securities value, you've got some project and royalty value, and then you've got the management team, which is the foundation of the whole endeavor. And so you have to look at it very dynamically, I'd say, and kind of compare the bits and pieces. It's not a simple valuation.
Yeah, I agree. And I really do think, and we'll continue to work on it, because it is a complicated valuation. It's not, there's 10 million ounces in the ground and next year there'll be a million or a million less. Like, it's not a linear valuation, because we do have a diversified portfolio, diversified commodity space, diversified jurisdiction. And we're constantly churning out new, well, as quickly as we can, churning out new ideas. So yeah, I know it's a bit of an ask to the investors, but maybe that's a part of it too, is to remember just that foundation is this management group that has generated these 16 projects to date and not easing back one bit, and continuing to pursue a number of things that, you know, are coming.
Absolutely. So, yeah. This is one for you, Rory, that we've got here. It's, have any of your projects received interest from larger mining companies?
Well, a couple of mid-tiers have wanted to talk about a couple of the projects. And at this point, it's been a little bit more of an open-ended conversation. One of the projects got scooped by our current partners. So, you know, one of the, like I was talking about how we can explore more effectively, sometimes the junior space can do deals a bit more effectively. And you know, I don't want to speak ill of the majors and the mid tiers, but they really do. They've got a more rigorous process. They have more layers to work through, as opposed to two guys and a map, you know? So yes, it's come in the past. I have a a standing appointment with a few different friends of mine that do work in the production side. And, you know, I do listen to what they're interested in and what they're looking for. That does help us rank what we're going to pursue next. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big pieces there is back to the management team. We've been in this business for, you know, a couple of decades on the long end of it. And we've built relationships that have stood the test of time. And those relationships have moved into some of the mid tiers and majors as they've progressed. Still conversations ongoing into the private equity side of stuff. And we continue to show them, but also ask them what they're looking for. And it's a two-way street. We need to know what they're looking for, and they need to know what we've got or what we have the ability to put together. So it's an ongoing conversation. But I think, Rory, I think that the crux of it, though, is at this stage, we don't have any definite partner on the horizon for anything, but we're in constant communication.
Yeah, that's the small and skinny of it.
Yeah.
So, why is the company listed in London and not in Canada, where our management team is?
Good question. You know, the easy thing would have been to list in Canada and to do this in Canada and to follow a tried and true path that so many other prospect generators have executed on. We chose London specifically because one, there's really only one other project generator in London. So it's a wide open field. I think we're a complementary investment to them, and I'm going to let the audience figure out who they are. It won't be that hard. They're a great company. And two, we're starting to cycle part of our portfolio as part of our business strategy into West Africa and wanting to have some project ownership in West Africa. What we've found historically is North American investors don't necessarily understand Africa very well. And it's a much more, you have to have experience on the ground there, which we do. And whereas UK and European investors have a much better understanding of Africa, and we think we'll be much more accepting of some of the strategies that we're putting together there and deals we're trying to build. So that's the short of it. The long of it is we had some really interesting support come out of Europe early stage from the financial community, and we wanted to be part of that ecosystem. So, Rory, one for you here. What does the upcoming year 2022 look like for exploration expenditures, both from Cloudbreak and its partners?
How much money will you give me? I'm asking Kyler because he's the boss, right? But genuinely, you know, we're going to continue to make the couple hundred thousand dollar level expenditures on our projects as we're generating them, and that's sort of been the nominal cost per endeavor, but with the projects that are partnered, we're waiting to see how Norseman's programs have gone this year. But based on murmurings and sort of what they're seeing in the drill core, I anticipate they'll probably have a similar program next year. So that's a couple million dollars plus, you know, $2.5 million there. We know that, like I said, Temas is going drilling imminently and preparing a PEA on the Blosh. So that'll be $2-3 million spent on that project. And then, you know, I'm going to cheat a little bit and just double check here. Probably see at least $200,000 on South Timmins spent by our partner. Same for Yak. And then as we look to option the rest of our portfolio, based on what's available right now, if we find the right partner for Klondike, that could be $2 million in drilling. As I said, we're on the verge of having that initial program completed, and so it's going to be drill time. And so, let's see, what did I say? That we'd spend a couple hundred thousand of our money and a kind of stacking up to about 5 million of partners' money nominally today.
Yeah, at least. I think it depends where I think a lot of it depends where Temes goes if they decide to advance that project and really lay the gas to it. And hopefully we'll have some clarity in the coming days about with your conversations with management there. So that could be a completely different story if they decide to do that.
Yeah. And you know, it's a conservative answer because of the initiatives that we've been working on for the past year, 18 months. Those projects could find themselves into partners' hands pretty quickly, and then they could do the programs that we propose on those. And again, because it's nebulous, I don't want to say that we're going to do more than I think that's a reasonable, you know, few hundred thousand in our expenditures to continue to work up new targets and at least opportunity for 5 million in partner expenditures on our projects.
Absolutely. And actually, I think that leads into the next question that you've got for me very, really nicely.
Yeah. What is the company seeing as the catalyst for growth?
Well, I think there's a couple of pieces. So we've been very active on a lithium brine strategy that we're currently working our way through. That's been a year in the making, plus or minus. That I think that's a big component of what we're going to see over the next 6 to 12 months, executing on pieces of that portfolio, and hopefully deriving a lot of shareholder value out of it. The other one, I think, with our work with Alianza on the strategic alliance, I think there's going to be a few more interesting bits and pieces come around out of that as we sort of finally get to a spot where we're all comfortable with deal terms and exploration activities and that. And I think the copper sector is doing nothing but heating up in the next while here. So I think, you know, with those two components said, I think there's a lot of value to derive out of that. We have a number of active ongoing generation opportunities. We don't want to cloud the water too much here, but they're looking again back into that base industrial or quote unquote battery metal sector very extensively through Africa, through North America, and into a couple of areas in East Southeast Asia that are of interest to us, but not a lot over there. We're going to have a busy 12 months, and you know, Rory and his technical team, they cringe every time I say we're going to have a busy 12 months because they really know it.
Well, and you know, the last 12 months were no siesta either. So
no, exactly. And we've got partners coming out with drill results, PEA results, early stage exploration results, and you know, we have the benefit of being part of that upside now as well. So.
Yep.
It's there's a lot to do, and we're just getting going. So, and then, you know, I think that actually just, you know, that leads into the final question we've got from the audience here. And it's, are there any assets that you are currently looking for partners on?
Yeah, so we still have three of our projects that we generated in the Northeast. So Northern Treasure, The Riz, and Icefall, and those are all polymetallic targets. Northern Treasure being copper gold, and the others being more gold silver with lead and zinc credits. And then we also have Klondike down in Colorado, which is that sediment hosted copper project that I talked about earlier. And so, yeah, the Northeast projects are very early stage, real conceptual stuff, and Klondike is about to be drill ready. So.
There you go. Good answer. Clear and concise. There are a few projects still available out there. We're actively doing business development on those. And, you know, we're project generator. We're going to end up coming up with some more ideas that we're going to be looking for quality partners on. So
yeah.
With that said, really appreciate the audience's time today. Rory, thank you for the great discussion. And as always, it's a pleasure working with you and building Cloudbreak Discovery here.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, everyone, for taking the time to let us gab at you.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.